Majority Report, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
Sam Cedar, this is the Majority Report. Those are the sounds coming from Tahrir Square only 10 minutes ago. I guess 20 minutes ago now, when Omar Suleiman, the titular vice president, perhaps temporary vice president of Egypt, announced that Hosni Mubarak had stepped down and was no longer the nominal president of Egypt. A stunning reversal from less than 24 hours ago, when Mubarak got up to a waiting crowd with the anticipation that he would resign then at about 3 p.m. our time yesterday. I guess it was closer to 4 p.m. He was scheduled to speak at 3 p.m. He ended up speaking at 4 p.m. No one understood why he was delayed. It became apparent because he got up and, instead of saying, "I am resigning," said that he was committed to leaving in September. And that he was going to delegate some of his authority to Suleiman. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Forgive me if I'm distracted. I am watching, as we speak, video of just an incredible outpouring of people in Tahrir Square, Liberation Square in Cairo, and the crowd is absolutely gone wild. Here is a report from just moments ago, literally 12 minutes ago, on Al Jazeera TV from a reporter. I pick it up halfway through. She's talking about the noise of that crowd. It sounded like people were banging on drums, but you can hear her. She starts off by saying they were actually stomping their feet. Let's listen to this.
Simply stomping the asphalt with their own feet. Homemade fireworks immediately from the balconies. People setting on fire, aerosol cans, music, chanting. It's just simply indescribable. 30 years of rule summed up in a 30-second statement. It's just simply unbelievable. I'm 30 years old, Adrian. I was born the week President Mubarak assumed power. All my years of life, I have known one president, and I can tell you, I have never seen this sentiment on the streets of Egypt, not even when Egypt won for the third time in a row the African Cup of Nations. Nothing like that. The sentiment is simply indescribable. Outside the presidential palace, people immediately started marching, saying they're going to join the other protesters in Tahrir Square.
And another report from Tahrir Square You can just tell the emotion is unbelievable, and this is just as it happened 10 minutes ago.
Undescribable. I mean, I cannot convey better than the sound of joy and excitement that is emanating from the square here, 12 floors below me. It is just an incredible scene, and wherever you look, people are dancing, flags are waving, and I think it's a historic moment that actually injected a huge amount of pride and dignity into the Egyptian people, a feeling they had not had for such a long time. That's the feeling that pushed them to actually start all this, to decide that's enough. We want to be proud in our country. We want our rights. And I think they got it. Earlier, I was speaking to some of the people here on the square, and they said they were angry, they were patient, and they said, well, if Tunis, such a small country, took 23 days, then it will take us much, much longer. And it took them actually a few days less than the Tunisian people. But I don't think...
It starts, you can't,
getting
in touch with her, but listen to this report.
Well, it's obviously so noisy that Shireen can't hear me.
I can hear you.
Shireen, tell us what it's like.
I've never seen anything like this. People are fainting. They're carrying them up through the crowds. They're spraying water on people just to try and keep people up because of the just complete excitement. I really worth telling me to describe what is going on here. The news started filtering through just as the prayers, the evening prayers, were coming to an end. So we had these hundreds of people on the floor praying, and suddenly they all rose up at the same time and put their hands in the air, and they said, God is great. And now they're shouting and screaming, saying, the people have brought the regime down. The chant that we've heard in the past week saying the people want the regime to come down, now it's happened, and it all happened here in the epicenter of this protest, Liberation Square. It started here. 3 weeks of this uprising to bring down the 30-year regime, and people here are absolutely ecstatic. Anyone that could have thought that perhaps a change in this kind of change with the end of Mubarak's presidency could have brought people to be afraid of the future should really watch these scenes. Nobody here is afraid. Everybody is looking forward to what comes next.
And so there it is. I mean, really moving stuff. And maybe we'll play the audio of Mubarak speaking yesterday, but it's almost sort of irrelevant at this point. The incredible anger expressed on Tahrir Square in the middle of his speech yesterday. And it is unclear at this point. I mean, from all the reporting I saw last night, and I got to say, you know, Rachel Maddow has been doing just an amazing job in covering this stuff. And frankly, CNN has been doing a very good job as well. It was clear that everyone, the Egyptian military, Americans, American government, people from around the world thought that he was going to step down, and they obviously had been given indication that he was. Now, it's quite possible that he knew he was going to step down at that point. And just figure I could use a little time to get myself, get my legal issues in order, make sure that I get commitments that I'm not going to be prosecuted, collect all the gold I have under my bed, put it in a bag so I could take it to Sharm el-Sheikh. Silawa at thearabist.net. Had written yesterday there could have been one of three things going through Mubarak's head when he gave that speech. Tone deafness. He genuinely thought that he could defuse the situation with a hat tip to the protesters, and that his so-called transfer of powers, which was more like, I'm going to take a vacation. I'll take a brief vacation. Would satisfy the protesters. Or two, cussedness, which I'm not exactly sure I know what that even means, but Maybe he allowed expectations to be raised so as to make the blow fall that much harder. In other words, he would be saying, if you can't get rid of me after this, then you can't get rid of me until I'm ready to go. Basically to demoralize the protesters, which obviously did not work. Neither one of those things worked. And or it could have been that Mubarak wanted to stir things up to actually provoke a march on the palace, increase the anger of the protesters, trigger some violence, and then, you know, try and sell to the general public. Like, look, it's going to be anarchy if you don't let me stay, which I think that ship had sailed sometime last week. And so Mubarak is gone. It is unclear who's in control right now. It's not clear if it's the military, if it is Suleiman. I think if Suleiman is there, he's probably doing it with the military's blessing. But who knows how long he's going to be there, because it's quite clear that the protesters are not going to accept Suleiman. And I think it's also quite clear that you cannot give the protesters this type of victory and expect them to stop. I mean, there is some very basic sort of models of how revolutions happen. And frankly, one of the reasons why I'm looking at that camera. One of the reasons why a revolution could happen here as opposed to, say, the Sudan in some ways, or Iran more easily, is because the door was actually opened enough. There was enough freedom, and any dictator worth his salt, any oppressive tyrant will tell you, you cannot give them an inch. I mean, to quote Get Smart, I guess it would be Buck Henry. Maybe it's even predates him. But give a man an inch and he thinks he's a ruler. And that's the way these things crumble. And
one of the reporters that I'm following on Twitter out in Cairo is saying that the power has officially been the responsibility of running the country has been delegated to the Supreme Military Council, which sounds about right for setting up a transitional.
Absolutely.
Situation.
You know, we spoke to Heather Hurlburt on day two, I think, of this uprising and of this revolution. And she had said the thing to watch, the institution to watch, is the military. This will live or die by the military. And she was correct. And we will have her on perhaps on Monday. To just recap on some of this. But, you know, the really interesting story that I think will not be told in its most great detail, and, of course, this is still ongoing. It's still ongoing, and it's going to be ongoing, but clearly a milestone has been reached in this event. But the real story here is going to be about these young people. I mean, at first, when this broke, when we were talking to Heather Hurlburt, we were not saying a word about the youth. And I don't think the American press, and I don't think we were as aware of it. A day or two later, I was talking about this Google exec Gonim and had read about this Facebook group and didn't realize how central to this revolution it was. And I had been doing quite a bit of reading. And I think Suleiman very early knew that it was the youth, because he was saying, parents, come down and get your kids. Now, I don't think he realized what was happening. I think it was a day or two late with that, because it had spread like wildfire. But this story about that sparked the uprising is terribly interesting. And let me just tell our guest that we're going to be late with him. So this is how the rally, the whole protest essentially started. Now, for some time, there had been Facebook groups on marking a labor protest where people were put down, I believe, in the maybe in 2008. Maybe it was before then. And this Facebook group was young people and administered in part by this Gonim guy. And So the Wall Street Journal reports that the protest, the first protest that started in the slum of Boulak al-Dukur on Cairo's western edge, was not consisting of educated youth who learned about protests on the internet. They were instead poor residents who filled a maze of muddy, narrow alleyways massed in front of a neighborhood candy store, which caught security forces completely flat-footed. Because the way in the past that these protests have always been stopped is the security forces get word that something's happening. They get there before the protesters get there, and they quash it, and they cordon it off, and they stop it right there, and that's it. Boom. And I've got a great story about, and in some respects it's called kettling. And there's a great story that there is an organization in Britain of youth internet guys who have figured out how to defeat kettling. They actually have some type of program and some type of a system. And it was a story in the Toronto Star. I still have that, and I'll read it in the coming days. And so while Ghanem recounted his meeting with Egypt's newly appointed interior minister, and the interior minister, the chief spy, internal spy, said no one understood how you did it. According to Wall Street Journal, the plotters, who formed the leadership core of the revolutionary youth movement, in January, they decided that they would try to replicate the accomplishments of the protesters in Tunisia who ousted President Zine al-Abidine Ben Ali. Their immediate concern was how to foil the Ministry of the Interior. These are the sort of secret police. One of the architects, a 41-year-old Basim Kamel, said, "We had to find a way to prevent security from making their cordon and stopping us." They met daily for 2 weeks in the cramped living room of the mother of Zaid al-Alimi. Alimi is a leading youth organizer for Mr. al-Baradei's. This would be al-Baradei, who obviously the former head of the UN Atomic Agency. His mother, a former activist who served 6 months in prison for her role leading protests during the bread riots in 1977, lives in a middle-class neighborhood of Aguza on the west bank of the Nile. Those present included representatives from six youth movements connected to opposition political parties, groups advocating labor rights, and the Muslim Brotherhood. We had heard Ghanem said that the Muslim Brotherhood wasn't totally into it, but they said if our youth want to do it, they can do it. They chose 20 protest sites, usually connected to mosques, in densely populated working-class neighborhoods around Cairo. They hoped that such a large number of scattered rallies would strain security forces, draw larger numbers, and increase the likelihood some protesters would be able to break out and link up in Tahrir Square. The group publicly called for protests at those sites for January 25th. So they did this publicly, a national holiday celebrating the country's wildly reviled police force. They announced the sites of the demonstrations on the internet and called for protests to begin at each one after prayers at about 2 p.m. But there was a 21st site that no one knew about. And to maintain that secrecy, the activists weren't the only ones calling for protests on that day. Other influential groups rallied their resources to the cause. The Facebook page for Khalid Said, the young man beaten to death by police in Alexandria, had emerged month earlier as an online gathering place. So there was at least these 20 protests, others being called for by other random sporadic groups, and a 21st location that was kept totally secret. For the final 3 days before the protests, Mr. Kamel, one of the leaders, and his fellow plotters say they slept away from home fearing police would come and arrest them in the middle of the night. Worrying their cell phones would be monitored, they used those of family members or friends. They sent small teams to do reconnaissance on the 21st site. It was the Boulak al-Dakor neighborhood's Hayis Sweet Shop, whose storefront and tiled sidewalk plaza, meant to accommodate outdoor tables in warmer months, would make an easy-to-find rallying point in an otherwise tangled neighborhood no different from countless others around the city. The plotters said they knew the demonstration success would depend on the participation of ordinary Egyptians in working-class districts like this one, where the internet and Facebook aren't as widely used. They distributed flyers around the city in the days leading up to the demonstration, concentrating efforts on Baluch al-Dakor. So in other words, they had 20 locations that were not near this place, but they put flyers around this place announcing those other locations. In the days leading up to the demonstration, organizers sent small teams of plotters to walk the protest routes at various speeds to synchronize how separate protests would link up. On January 25th, security forces predictably deployed by the thousands at each of the announced demonstration sites. So they had thousands of cops at these different 20 sites. Meanwhile, four field commanders chosen from the organizers' committee began dispatching activists in cells of 10. To boost secrecy, only one person per cell knew their destination. In these small groups, the protesters advanced toward the Hayis sweet shop, massing into a crowd of 300 demonstrators free from police control. The lack of security then prompted neighborhood residents to stream by the hundreds out of the neighborhood's cramped alleyways, swelling the crowds into the thousands. This, according to sweet shop employees, saw this thing just all of a sudden grow. At 1:15, these thousands of people began marching toward downtown Cairo. By the time police redeployed a small contingent to block their path, the protesters' ranks had grown enough to easily overpower them. The other marchers organized at mosques around the city failed to reach Tahrir Square. These are the other 20. Their efforts foiled by riot police cordons. The Baluch al-Dakor marchers, the only group to reach their objective, occupied Tahrir Square for several hours until after midnight, when a police attacked demonstrators with tear gas and rubber bullets. This is the first night, if you saw any of the footage, where people started attacking these police vans and tried to push one into the Nile River. It was the first time Egyptians had seen such a demonstration in their streets, and it provided a spark credited with emboldening tens of thousands of people to come out to protest the following Friday. And there were protests in Tahrir Square the days there, but it wasn't until the Friday that they just swelled. And they have stayed there ever since. And that is the story that will be told and examined and whatnot. And I should add, just after Mubarak's speech yesterday, Obama came out with his most strongly worded declaration, I guess, statement that he had released. And that was, the Egyptian people have been told that there was a transition of authority. This is in response to Mubarak's speech. But it is not yet clear that this transition is immediate, meaningful, or sufficient. That is basically echoing what the protesters' demands were. He has to step down now. It has to be a legitimate regime change. Too many Egyptians remain unconvinced that the government is serious about genuine transition to democracy, and it's the responsibility of the government to speak clearly to the Egyptian people and the world. As we have said from the beginning of this unrest, the future of Egypt will be determined by the Egyptian people, but the United States has also been clear that we stand for a set of core principles. We believe the universal rights of the Egyptian people must be respected and their aspirations must be met. That is about as straightforward as I think you can get. And timed, obviously, because they were clear that Mubarak was going to go. But this is very important. You know, this is, he's walking a tightrope there. I guess the moments leading up to Mubarak's resignation are far less relevant now in terms of the tweets, but the protesters had taken over the NDP. That was the ruling party's HQ in Asyut. The leader of the NDP had resigned again. State TV was surrounded by tanks and troops, but military personnel were actually throwing candy over the barbed wire from the presidential palace out to, so they had clearly gotten into the canteen, as it were, at the palace, which would have been an indication that he was on his way out. And Mubarak had, in fact, headed to Sharm el-Sheikh even before he was reported to have left. So we're going to take a break. It is Casual Friday, folks. Whether you know it or not, gets a little less casual when a revolution succeeds. But that doesn't mean that we don't have time for Chris Rosen. And later in the program, in our post show, we're going to welcome another guest to the program. Longtime Majority Report listeners may know him as Ross Broccoli, and his name is Ross Broccoli. So anyone would know him as Ross Broccoli. And fans of Pilot Season would know him, the star of Pilot Season. We're going to have him on in the post-show just because it's Casual Friday, and he's going to give me an update on his chickens, his goats, and probably why he thinks that the Fed is some type of plot by interterrestrials. That should be interesting. Stick with us. We still have more news, an amazing story that I'm going to tell you. I probably end up getting on the flip side in the post-show, but an amazing story about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce targeting journalists with essentially industrial spy technology. One of those journalists, Glenn Greenwald, we will have him Monday talking about it, but stick around. We'll be right back. Chris Rosen, are you there? Can you hear me?
I can, Sam. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. And I can see you. I see that you have shaven.
Oh, yeah. I put myself together. I was very excited for this big appearance.
Yes. I have an interesting juxtaposition on my computer screen. On one hand, on the right of my screen, I see a shaven Chris Rosen sitting on his couch about to tell me about some films. And on the other hand, I see hundreds of thousands of people in Tahrir Square, Liberation Square in Cairo, on Al Jazeera, celebrating their independence. It's quite a juxtaposition.
I mean, obviously, when you want to talk about big stories happening, you come to me. So,
right. What is your feelings about Egypt?
You know, I was actually very excited about everything today, and it seems really good. Are you talking about Egypt or the Lady Gaga Born This Way release?
All right, let's do this.
That song
Chris
is
Rosen.
Awesome.
Let's do this. I'm trying to think of what movie I watched last week that was really good. Did you
The Social Network?
No. What did you recommend?
That was what we talked about last week.
No, I got
The Social Network and Exit Through the Gift Shop, which are both wonderful.
Is the Sammy Cam down? I don't know. It might be. It's 12 o'clock.
No, it's
not. Yes. And then did you you didn't recommend any last week, did you?
No, I did. I did Social Network and Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Right. You know, someone emailed me and said, how is it that Chris Rosen's been able to watch Social Network so many times, but he's never seen Battlestar Galactica?
God, we're still on Battlestar? I'm just not going to watch it now because everyone wants me to fucking watch it.
All right. Well, that's
that's how I'll roll.
I love it. So what do you got for us this week?
Well, in honor of Egypt and stuff, I thought I'd recommend Cairo Time, which is on demand right now. I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it. Have you?
No.
Well, it's a Lost in Translation-esque type story. A Canadian woman goes to Egypt to be with her, UN like diplomat husband, but he's away, doing like diplomatic things. So he enlists his Egyptian driver and like confidant to help like take her around the city, and the two of them kind of have like these very nice like romantic few days, and it's kind of like a very low-key love story type between the Canadian woman and the Egyptian man.
Do you get a good sense of Egypt, of Cairo?
You really do. It all takes place in Cairo. They shot it in Cairo. They go through the whole city. You get kind of nice sense. It's very beautiful. They make the city look gorgeous. They go to they go to the pyramids and stuff, and you get the sense of the way that city works. It's Patricia Clarkson is the woman. She's actually wonderful in it, and Alexander Siddig is the man, and he's great. He's like a George Clooney type. That's kind of like he brings like that kind of suaveness to it. It's not very. It's not funny. It's not
sort
a romantic
like
comedy.
A Sam
it's like
Cedar type.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And it's a very good movie. It's a little slow if you're not interested. Like I said, it's like Lost in Translation, which has that kind of like slower pace. But it's a very nice movie, and I think you might like it, especially with the Egypt ties right now. So
Cairo Time. All right.
Yeah.
I like that one. I'm going to give that one a bell.
And then that's
you
on demand.
You can't hear that, but I gave.
I didn't
it
hear
a bell
that. I can imagine what a bell sounds like. It's
okay.
Cool.
Good.
So that one's on demand. And then on Netflix, again, because it's Valentine's Day and, because Cairo Time's not that funny. I thought a nice romantic comedy would be good, and I know we've gone, you know, everyone kind of hates romantic comedies and stuff. So here's one that you probably have never seen. You might have heard of it because you're in the know, but it's called The Baxter. It's written and directed by Michael Showalter. Do you
know
him?
Showalter very well, actually. Name Drop Friday. I know Michael Showalter very well. Oh, yes. We could have him on. I could bring him up right now if I wanted to.
Great. Well, he wrote and directed this movie. It's called The
Baxter. I remember
when
he did.
Yeah, and it's a very funny movie. It's very good.
I'm sure
good.
There's a lot of friends
sweet.
Of mine in it.
Yes, Michael Ian Black is in it.
I've worked with Michael Ian Black on multiple occasions. He's
very funny.
Name drop.
Elizabeth Banks is in it. I don't know if you know her.
I don't know her, but she knows a lot of the same people that I know.
So there you go. Paul Rudd is in it.
He's
in it for
Paul.
Like 5 minutes.
Nice guy.
A.D. Miles is in it for like 5 minutes.
I know A.D. Yes, I know A.D. quite well.
So, you know.
David Wayne?
What's
does he make
David Wayne is in it.
Well,
yes,
David's
he does.
A friend. Sure.
So.
Anybody else?
And Justin Theroux, do you know him?
I've met Justin. I'm not as close with him as I am with all those other people that you said.
And, so it's very...
Who else?
Michelle Williams. I don't know if you know her.
Who's that?
She's, we were talking about her last week. She's in Blue Valentine, and she's from Dawson's Creek.
Nope.
Whatever. She's the most famous person in the cast, but she plays the love
Never
interest.
Never heard of her.
You know, what can you do?
For me,
but
it's not
adorable
about
movie.
Celebrities. It's just I happen to have a lot of friends who are celebrities.
Are also famous.
Isn't she up for an
Oscar?
Is she up for an Oscar?
Michelle Williams is up for an Oscar.
She is up for an Oscar.
Now, this was made, you know, before she was up for an Oscar.
I understand what you're saying.
So, it's a great movie. It's very funny, very sweet. You know, Michael Showalter is great in it. And I think it would be a perfect movie for you to watch Valentine's Day. It's on Netflix on demand.
You know what I'm not going to do on Valentine's Day? Watch that movie. You know why?
Well, it's over the weekend.
Birthday.
It's over the weekend.
It's my wife's birthday.
Oh, goodness.
Well,
that kind of sucks for her because she loses
the I'm not going to watch that movie because I'm spending the weekend with my friend Brad Anderson, director Brad Anderson.
Oh, really?
You may have heard of him.
I did. Did he have anything to do with Who's the Caboose?
No, he didn't. But he directed Next Stop Wonderland, Happy Accidents,
right.
Vanishing on 7th Street. I happened to have gone to that premiere the other night. Not a big deal.
You know, funny story about Vanishing on 7th Street right now for your listeners, obviously since you've already seen it, you won't do this, but it's also available right now on Time Warner on demand. You can watch it. You don't even have to go see that one in the theater. It's a day and date release, so it's out right,
right yeah,
now.
No,
on
he
Time
mentioned
Warner
that
on
to
demand.
Me while we were having a personal conversation about it.
Right, so there you go. So fans Name can
drop
watch that.
Friday, we got to.
And
banned.
Sam, what about Who's the Caboose? I see. I don't know. If we didn't talk about this, but it's coming out on DVD and available on demand, right?
That's right. You know, the DVD that I give out to my Majority Report members as part of our swag package. Of Who's the Caboose, which stars Sarah Silverman, friend of mine.
Andy Dick,
David Cross, John Benjamin, Kathy Griffin, Mark Maron, Ross Broccoli makes an appearance.
Huge
Laura
cast.
Keitlinger, Laura Silverman, Jana Marie Hupp. The list goes on and on. But that's not important. The DVD that I give out to our members, Schwag, is like a pre... It's like a... Well, it's another example of me trying to make a buck and actually losing money on it. But the DVD is coming out as a new release, and it's going to be on video on demand. It's going to be
right.
on iTunes. It's going to be on Amazon. But we don't need to talk about that. It's not happening until March 29th.
Okay. Well, you know, I just want to bring it up. We'll bring it up again on March 29th, I guess, but just to get fans excited, you know.
Yeah. No. People are very excited.
Very.
I already sense that. All right. Well, Chris, we're going to run because we're running behind so much
yes,
news
that's right.
today. But,
good work.
Thanks for joining us. And,
no problem. Listen to Lady Gaga.
Cairo time and what was the other one was the Baxter. I think today was pretty good. I mean.
Yeah, I thought so.
It would be nice to get, you know, sort of like some real substantial movies, but that's fine.
Yeah, you know, I think that was a good start. And we didn't even talk about Exit to the Gift Shop again, which we could do because
it's
I watched
not,
it again.
It's not, you don't write for cinema line, you write for movie line.
Right.
I mean, you don't write for filmline.com, you write for movieline.com.
Right. Movieline.com. Let's get that plug in and everyone come and visit.
Movieline.com. So, I mean, if you like movies as opposed to cinema or film, some of us prefer
Right.
Cinema
I mean, if
film.
You want cinema, what are you going to do?
You go to Movie Line.
Go to Film Forum or something.
Right. Okay. Well,
you want movies? Yeah.
Is there anybody from Air America working there?
No, there's no one. Come on. Right, I have a good thing going with you. You have a nice rapport.
Okay. I just hung up on him.
Did you really?
Yes. We're going to take a break. Listen, the way we're going to... Oh. Yeah, why didn't we play into this?
We talked about this.
Huh?
We talked about this before. It's too short.
Well, as soon as we have him on, then we say.
Casual Fred.
Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask. He said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
Kind of like it as an outro.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially after you hang up on it. It's perfect. Yeah.
Okay, I want to get to this story. I'm going to give you a brief overview of this story because this story is going to take me 20 minutes to do. And we are butting up against the end of the show. Well, I'll probably do a good some of it. Listener Neffer, longtime Majority Report member, sent me a link to a story that was in Ars Techna. Is that it? Ars Techna? Is that the name of that? And it was an interesting story about a guy who worked at a security firm, and he was trying to track down Anonymous. Now, the story doesn't make it clear why he's doing that. But it's a very interesting story in and of itself. This guy... sort of like he appeared to make it like it was an exercise to track down Anonymous in this story, but it clearly was not, and I found out later why it wasn't. This guy was thought that he had cracked who Anonymous was and who these people were, and he was supposedly just doing it to enhance his profile as a security expert. And to go and give talks to the government, and he was contemplating, it's unclear whether or not he was actually going to sell this information to the FBI, because Anonymous, I should tell you, is a group of people who have been facilitating some of the WikiLeaks stuff. And if not facilitating actually with the WikiLeaks, but I guess... striking back and against corporations who have been messing with WikiLeaks, like credit card companies that won't MasterCard that won't fulfill their donations, or PayPal, or other organizations. Anonymous also is the ones that blew the lid off of Scientology. And there are a lot of guys who sort of hang out at 4chan, I think. I mean, I don't know. And I get even nervous like saying the words 4chan, because these people can wreak havoc on your lives. They're sort of this hacktivist community. And so this really smug security guy thought that he had cracked who Anonymous was and was going to sell this material to the FBI. And the Anonymous people figured it out, and they went in and they basically just crashed their email server and took 50,000 emails off their email server. So I thought that was the end of the story. And then I get an email later in the evening from another listener, Eric, big supporter of the Majority Report, and also just sends me a lot of great stories. And I had read part of those stories, but it seems that this organization, a company called H.B. Gary Federal, was one of the spy companies, like a, you know, industrial spy organization, security organization, they refer to themselves, that was hired by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce through one of their law firms, And U.S. Chamber of Commerce is obviously a trade association that represents Exxon, AIG, Bank of America, other major international corporations. So the chamber, now this is according to Think Progress, hired the lobbying firm Hunton and Williams, who turned around and hired H.B. Gary Federal, Palantir, another security firm, and Barrico Technologies. This group was collectively called Team Themis to develop tactics for damaging progressive groups and labor unions, particularly Think Progress, the Labor Coalition Called Change to Win, SEIU, U.S. Chamber Watch, Stop the Chamber, and the Velvet Underground, which is a group of media organizations. So this H.B. Gary Federal, the only connection here was that some guy from H.B. Gary Federal was messing with Anonymous. Well, and then Anonymous got 50,000 emails. Well, it turns out that Anonymous found in these emails and are going have got started to post them online. And Think Progress has got a hold of these, among other people. According to one document prepared by Team Themis, the campaign included an entrapment project. It called for first creating a false document, perhaps highlighting periodical financial information, to give to a progressive group opposing the chamber, and then to subsequently expose the document as a fake to undermine the credibility of the chamber's opponents. This is called, forgive the language, a rat F. Rat F. Some people suspect that Karl Rove did a rat F on Dan Rather. That there was, in reality, some real information about George Bush going AWOL from the National Guard. So to head that off, somebody created a fake document that could be easily disproved, but was actually about something that was true. Some people suggest that the book Fortunate Son, the author of that, was given also this material, and he was easily discredited because he had a cocaine problem and other issues. So this is a long-term political industrial tactic. In addition, the group proposed creating fake insider personas to generate communications within Change to Win to scuttle things. The security firms on Team Themis had hoped to obtain $200,000 for initial background research, then $2 million for a larger disinformation campaign. Now, Anonymous published these emails from H.B. Gary Federal. So people have started to go through these 40 to 50,000 emails. Then it became clear that that H.B. Gary Federal was not just playing with Anonymous to prove that he was some type of macho security guy. It was because H.B. Gary Federal was hired by this Hunton and Williams to go after Anonymous and other supporters of WikiLeaks, because WikiLeaks has information about Bank of America. So you see, this organization... This is a tricky story here now. It merges. The Chamber of Commerce is using this organization, HB Federal, and these other organizations, Team Themis, to discredit left-wing liberal opposition groups and media groups. Bank of America is also using HB Federal to discredit, coincidentally, other left-wing journalists like Glenn Greenwald, it turns out, and Brad Friedman, because they have been reporting so much about WikiLeaks. And they were actually attempting to sabotage or discredit Glenn Greenwald. This according to Think Progress's things. And Empty Wheel, Marcy Wheeler over at Fire Dog Lake, reports the same thing. She has a clip of the slide in a slideshow. You know, a PowerPoint that they were giving. And it's interesting. He has Glenn Greenwald up there, and it has like a spool of connections. You know, how they diagram social networks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Greenwald's on there. And the H.B. Garrow Federal firm basically created this thing that showed that Glenn Greenwald was critical in the Amazon to OVH transition. This is when Amazon shut down WikiLeaks servers, and OVH must be some other server, you know, server service. It is this level of support that needs to be disrupted. These are established professionals, okay, talking about Greenwald and other liberal media people that have a liberal bent, but ultimately most of them, if pushed, will choose professional preservation over cause. Such is the mentality of most business professionals. Without the support of people like Glenn, WikiLeaks would fold. We're going to have to talk about this. You know, I'm going to have to do a whole show on this.
Yeah.
Because that statement in and of itself, in addition, how many times have we talked about how Glenn Greenwald is so untouchable because he doesn't give a shit about his career?
Yeah. Can we get him on Monday?
He's going to be on Monday.
Excellent.
We have him booked for Monday. It's going to be a pre-tape. How many times have we talked about that with Glenn? About Glenn. And how instructive is it and indicative of what the problem is that this organization, who deals with these type of people all the time, believe that's the dynamic? They were wrong about Glenn, but they were right about most of them. This is just a touch of the story. I'm going to get into this more on Monday, because this story, what this organization has been doing is stunning. It's absolutely stunning. We got to take a break. 10 extra minutes of the bonus free show. I want to remind you folks of a couple of things. One, that as of Tuesday or Wednesday, you will not be able to receive any information or any of the entertainment value, the news, the interviews on the flip side. That is the post show. That will be for members only. If you cannot afford $10 a month, email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll work something out. We have a lot of people who, frankly, can't afford anything. And are on fixed incomes, are retired, lost jobs, been out of jobs for 2 years. We're taking care of them. No one who wants to listen to the full podcast will not be able to do so because of financial hardship. I promise that. And people, some people have begun to send in contributions to help sponsor that, and that's much appreciated. But no one will be denied listening to the show. But for those of you who can't afford it and who do listen to the full hour and a half or want to support the first 40 minutes for that matter, become a member at majority.fm. And you get, you know, you get the DVDs, you get some swag, and you'll get some bonus material. And, you know, we're going to be enhancing the quality of the members only post show. And it buys technology for us, and it's incredibly helpful. And, of course, as always, buy some coffee at justcoffee.coop. Put the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box at the time of your purchase. Get 10% off. We get a little kickback. Buy your Amazon goods through our link. You can find the link at the top of our Majority Report bookshelf, book and DVD store. And that link is right at the top of majority.fm. And send guest suggestions. Stay in touch. And we'll be right back with the post show. You can IM me at Majority FM. And we're going to be interviewing Ross Broccoli from Lincoln, Nebraska. We are back. Ross Broccoli. He's trying to figure out how to sign on to this thing. I think. I just called. They only have one phone. It's one cell phone, I guess. And his wife's at work. So hopefully we'll get to him. Let's take some... we'll take some IMs in the meantime. Majority FM. See if when he comes on. Let's see how this works. I went to school in Burlington. Fun college town. They even have their own lake monster up there. Champ, I say we all move up and double its size in a few years. This was that from yesterday? Maybe it was from today. We were talking about moving up to Burlington, right? I mean, if they to Vermont, if they, it's cold, man. If they get single payer. Nefer, the morning I go out really early. Mubarak doesn't bother to check with me, the Queen, no less, before announcing he's stepping down. Pharaoh, you just can't get to work with the people. Sheesh. Serious question. What can I do to help further explore the story you sent? There is more to. I am me after the show. Well, I mean, I would just follow, go to Empty Wheel, Fire Dog Lake, go to Think Progress. I mean, I wouldn't even begin to know how to investigate something like that. Or though, I guess you could Google FB, HB Gary Federal.
I'm on their website right now.
No. I wouldn't go to their website. HB Gary Federal emails.
Yeah.
And maybe you could start to find where they've dumped these things.
Well, there's actually Kyle has a link to the torrent, but it's about 5 gigs worth of data. So that's an overnight download for some of us.
I was talking to Kyle about this last night, and you know, Kyle is the guy who developed DonateYourAccount.com, and when he starts to hear stories like this, it's like, you know, this is like for rogue geeks like Kyle. This is like it's like shaking a bottle of meth in front of a meth head. He's like, I gotta try and hack something. I've got to create havoc. So we got to strap Kyle down. We can't afford to have him go to prison. Not before we sequester, at the very least. Gatteron, leaders of the world, take note. The people will only take so much. Hooray. I keep trying broccoli. This may not work. We worked it yesterday. New name for the movie segment, A Failure to Communicate with Chris Rosen. So many layers of meaning. Don't forget to cut all that mess out.
I will.
And this broccoli mess, too. With Egypt, police and political corruption in mind, a Netflix instant watch recommendation, the Red Riding Trilogy. Red Riding Trilogy, regional UK corruption in the late 70s, intertwined with serial murders. Oh, yeah, we should have like a name drop. Like a bloop, bloop. That's a good idea for every name drop. Red Riding Trilogy and a bloop. Somebody will send me that bloop.
I'm here, Cedar. Welcome. You're not calling me.
Because you got to get on your Skype. It's 12 o'clock. Sammy Cam down. Shanksoft. I can't even come up with for air as I'm drowned in names like Name Drop Friday, says Kyle. Name Drop Fridays. Did you know the New Yorker piece on Paul Haggis' exit from Scientology? Zeno be praised. I remember Janine brought those Scientology volunteers onto the show post 9/11. Well, I will address both those comments. First of all, Paul Haggis, didn't he do that movie with the four quadrants?
I think so, yeah.
Here he is. Ladies and gentlemen, Ross Broccoli. All right, you're on the air, Ross.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ross Broccoli is joining us from Lincoln, Nebraska. Thanks for joining us, Ross.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sam. You want me to turn down the volume like this?
No.
Or like this? Hello?
No, keep the volume up.
Okay, keep the volume up. All right.
So, Ross, have you been... checking out this whole Egypt thing?
Yeah, I heard Mubarak just stepped down, right? But who's next, right? Because they're going building to building, aren't they?
What do you mean in terms of finding new... building to building in terms of finding new leaders?
Well, no, the leaders, whoever's there at the end when they throw all of them out. Isn't that how it's going? I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know either. All right. Well, a couple things I wanted to check on you. What have you been up to? Because, you know, you're a little bit part of the Majority Report lore. We used to do the farm report with you, right?
Yeah, and then I got canned, right?
Yeah, that's correct. But, you know,
I never figured out why I got canned.
None of these segments last forever, buddy.
I don't even think they let me finish my last segment.
Well, that's possible. But I had you back on when I was doing the show solo. Do you remember that? Came into studio.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
So Give me an update. What's the deal with what's going on in the farmland?
Well, it's winter time, so we're just kind of feeding animals, and then not a lot to do. This whole mayor thing, of course, but
wait a second. Wait. Take one step at a time. And I should you know what? Let's start with this. People, let me just give you people a little background as to who you are. You and I met back in the mid 90s, I guess. Part of that downtown alternative comedy scene. You made a little money doing some commercials, became quite a commodity in California. And in fact, much of your story is, retold license in pilot season. At least that dynamic of it.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was looking at your website.
Yeah.
And my name's not even mentioned as one of the characters in the movie.
In
but
pilot
Marin
season?
Is in bold. Marin's in bold letters.
In pilot season.
And he just had one season, right? He just had that one scene where he goes, right.
No. In Caboose or pilot season?
Pilot season.
Oh, well, that's a mistake.
I'll say it's a mistake.
That's definitely a mistake. All right, but so be that as may, you have your own stories about Marin to tell, if we have time for that. But and you made a couple movies. One was Carpula. Tell everybody about that movie, just briefly.
It's a 10-year anniversary. It's the story of Janis DeBravius, the guy who, a modern retelling of Janis DeBravius, the guy who brought carp to America. And I'm thinking about going back in for the 10-year, because I've got a couple Chinese people that are interested.
Now, I don't know if people understand what you're saying, but you edited about 14 different versions of that movie. Is that right?
Probably five.
Five. And you're thinking of re-editing again because there's some Chinese people.
Thinking about shooting some more.
Okay.
And making some more ponds.
And now you're actually building, that's the other thing, you actually are building ponds on your property as part of the movie, or is it sort of like a twofer?
Oh, it's a total twofer.
And
both of them.
Now, then we did. You did another movie, which I was arguably the lead in, although I don't know how it got ended up being edited, which was incredibly prescient. When did you shoot the stuck truck?
We shot it in 93. And what do you mean you weren't the lead? You're the only guy in the whole movie.
It wasn't 93.
2003. Four.
And it was about, essentially, a guy who was going around committing mortgage fraud, building these half-built houses on the in the suburbs of Lincoln, Nebraska, and nobody cared because everybody was making money off it. The idea of mortgage fraud just...
No paperwork.
Just a blip in people's eye, but Broccoli was on top of it. And then it turned out to be something to do with space aliens and corn.
Yeah.
it's a leap, isn't it?
I don't know. In from Nebraska, it's going to have something to do with corn. So aliens, I guess, is the problem, huh?
Well, I mean, that just made it a little bit, it was just an interesting element to bring in. Because you didn't bring it in.
Yeah, without the alien element, that thing would have done a big, that would have had a big ride.
I think that's very possibly true, actually. The alien element you brought in only 30 seconds before the end of the movie.
Okay, right.
Some people may have said that was a little deus ex machina.
Does that mean easy out?
Sort of.
Okay.
So give me an update on the farm.
We got about another month and a half to go for spring.
Well, but tell me what kind of animals you got on there, because the last time I was there, you had some chickens, and people can take a look at a video. If you Google movable chicken coop, Ross Broccoli, not spelled like the vegetable, but B-R-O-C-K-L-E-Y, you can see something that's pretty amazing.
We got a lot of those going on, yep. And then a lot of goats.
Goats, chickens, what else?
Llamas, just four llamas now, but gardens, mostly vegetables and carp. What? Soon to be carp again.
Why just four llamas? What happened to the other ones?
Well, one died, but I've only, you know, I started with two, and then we had five, and now one died, but we have four still.
Didn't you have some steer and some pigs, too?
Yeah, I've got the neighbor, the cows busted out so many times, the neighbor just said he'd take them.
Okay, and what are you growing?
You name it. Grow
goji
everything.
Berries.
Yep.
You got goji berries.
Yep.
Really?
But who cares about that? What's going on? What do you guys want to talk about?
Well, I've been telling you what I'm talking about. What do you want to talk about? You want to tell us your theory about the Fed? Do people want to ask Broccoli questions? I can take them over. IM. What do you want to talk, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, the Fed's fine. Let's do that. For the people, it used to be called the Federal Reserve, but they dropped the reserve part. I think the cat's out of the bag on that.
That's right. There's nothing held there. It just goes out the window, out the door.
Nothing held there. Yeah, there's about 70 trillion obligations.
70 trillion in obligations.
Well, yeah. What's the debt?
The debt right now is 14 point something trillion.
Yeah, those are the books that you're looking at. Those are the books, the other set of books.
Well, but I mean, it doesn't matter if there's a backup books. I mean, in terms of debt, that's the worst place you want to be, in the non-public recognition that you're owed money.
Yeah, that's what they're admitting they owe at this point.
All right. I mean,
I have an idea, though.
Yeah.
And I, part of my platform for the mayor campaign.
So wait, you're running for mayor of Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right.
Okay. When is the election?
And this May.
And are you an official candidate?
I'm putting the paperwork together right now.
How's that going?
We'll have to register to vote. So that's, I don't know how long that takes, but I finally found a candidate worth voting for. Right. Isn't that, has that,
there you go.
Has that been done before?
That joke? I've never heard that joke.
Okay. Well, anyway,
probably,
but we're getting into the state bank thing. We're going to issue our own currency.
Where? In Lincoln?
In Nebraska. This is the idea. I mean, we've already got designs for the dollar, and I want to put an ear of corn on it.
But wait a second. Would, as mayor of Lincoln, Nebraska, would you control the state currency?
I'd like to think I would have a voice. I'm just talking about the design of the bill.
Okay.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
I want to put an ear of corn on it. And you know how the federal bill has the all-seeing eye? This would be the all-hearing ear.
Of corn. Yeah.
You like it?
It's good. It's good. I like it.
What color is the money? Is it going to be green?
What color is the money?
The corn's yellow.
Right.
And I guess it wouldn't matter. That red and white, probably, right? Red, white, and yellow?
Red, white, and yellow. Sure. Okay. There you go. What else you got? Is that the only thing that you're doing? Just coming up with the design for the currency that the state's going to do?
Well, I just wanted to wrap up my idea about the Fed. We wanted to talk about the Fed.
Okay.
So I wanted to propose a solution. I like to have solutions for anything you guys are talking about.
All right. Let's hear the solution.
What are you talking? The solution is states print their own money.
And so what do? You exchange it every at the border?
The states, North Dakota does it, you know. North Dakota prints North Dakota dollars.
Well, I mean, I've heard of, like, municipalities that have their own currency. Like, out in the Berkshires, I think, of Massachusetts, there's actually, like, Berkshire dollars or something that people use as sort of like currency. It's not good anywhere else, but people
have a spend in the state.
Well, the idea is like that people want to build their local economies, and so that's the way that they keep money built. I don't think that's such a crazy idea.
No, they want to provide credit because the banks aren't giving any credit. They shut that down, and they are basically going to declare bankruptcy, right?
Who's that?
State governments. Well,
state governments can't technically declare bankruptcy, but they're trying to allow them to try. Some Republicans are trying to get them to so that they can basically default on pensions for state workers.
Right, and we need lines of credit, and if they're not going to give it to us, then we need to start our own banks to provide lines of credit to start getting this country going again.
I hear you, but then you're talking about more borrowing, right? I think the bottom line is you got to borrow money. You got to get more money into the system. The government should be borrowing more money and spending more. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it's something like that. There's no way out of this mess. The QE3 and 4, it's never going to stop. We'll just end up with a devalued currency. And so I think those local currencies is one of the more...
What's such a danger of devalued currency? Like, I understand the idea that if you have rampant inflation, that's going to be a problem. But if our currency gets devalued, you realize that it helps our economy because we start being able to sell products overseas, and it would make it actually cheaper for people. It would make it more cost effective for some companies to actually produce some stuff here rather than trying to bring it in from overseas.
Okay, but what about the inflation and the prices and the high price and you can't buy anything and you can't pay your rent?
Well, that's right. I mean, you don't want out of control inflation, but
and that's been the whole scam the whole time.
Some inflation's not necessarily a bad thing because then you actually take the pressure off a lot of homeowners who are underwater in their mortgage, because any loan that you have becomes less onerous if there's some inflation. We have interest rates that are like 1%. If you put your money in a bank for 5 years, you get 1.5% back. It would be nice to bring some interest rates up a little bit. I mean, but you don't want to do it too much. But inflation is not the boogeyman that everybody makes it out to be. Of course, if you have 15, 20% inflation, that's a problem.
Sam, I know you don't know what you're talking about there. Yeah, what else are we talking about?
I don't know. We got two more minutes. Tell me some other topic. What's on your mind? It's Casual Friday on this end.
Okay, Casual Friday. You pick a topic. I can talk about anything. It's your show. But I know we can't wrap it up with banking.
I'm trying to propagate some grapevines.
It's a great idea. Don't forget to dip them a little bit.
I did. Rooting powder, right?
Yeah.
I did that. Now, how
or
can
willow
I tell,
water.
How long do I wait and see if it worked?
When they have leaves on them or they're dead, one of the two.
How can I tell if it's dead?
Scrape the bark off a little bit, and if it's not green under there, it's dead.
Okay.
With your fingernail.
Wait, I hope I didn't kill them.
Well, you can always clip some more. They're growing everywhere out there, aren't they?
Yeah. Let's see. Do we have any questions for Ross Broccoli?
Are you getting lots of emails?
Well, I'm getting some IMs, but it's not, I'm not getting any, let's see. No, I'm not getting any.
Okay.
Anybody
else? I watched your MSNBC stuff. That was a really nice volunteer gig you did for them.
Yeah, I wanted to help out GE. You know how that goes, man. They just, you got to keep the economy humming along. So when GE needs a break,
everybody needs help.
Yeah. Somebody just, do we have the Marin song? All right, here. Somebody wants to, Jimmy Reefer Cake. did a Marin song. Let's see if you can hear this. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
I don't know if you can you hear that?
I can't hear that.
Hey, Marin, you got the number two podcast.
Can you hear that?
Will be best-selling.
I can.
You can?
You owe it all
no.
to them.
Oh. All right, Broccoli.
Who wrote it?
Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Is that Benjamin?
No, no. No, it's just Jimmy Reefer Cake.
I'll Google it.
All right, well, listen, buddy, we're going to have to wrap this up.
Good talking to you, man.
Yeah, sorry we don't have more.
Well, when those emails
oh, do you
want to
tell a Marin story?
Send it to me.
You want to tell a Marin story? Because Marin is going to be on next week.
Okay, yeah. Tell him I listened to his interview with Nick Sorensen, where basically they were reflecting on their friendship with me, and I think they think I'm dead.
Will you
please tell them I'm alive and well? I live in the middle flyover country, I guess they'd call it.
Oh, do they refer to you like completely in the past tense, like you're
well,
not...
yeah, I'm sure everybody was probably wondering how I died after listening to their conversation. And then they talked about Hollywood for about an hour. I listened to them because I haven't, you know, talked to him for so long. But
when was the last time you talked to Sorensen? Sorensen's career is really taken off too now.
Really?
Yeah, he's in some big Adam Sandler movie, right?
Isn't he Adam Sandler's right hand man?
Is he?
Aren't they partners in all this?
I think, no, I don't, maybe, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he writes his movies and, I don't know.
Oh, I guess he is, I guess he is. I guess he is, he's sort of hooked onto that Sandler train. I didn't realize that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, listen to the interview with him with Marin. You'll get about 45 minutes about it.
All right. Well, Ross Broccoli, can we get that that Nebraska song on? Got the theme song from Pilot Season to usher you out.
I appreciate it, Sam.
All right, we'll do this again soon.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, bye. Ross Broccoli. He gets very, he plays it very close to the vest when he comes on, when I've had him on. You know, he was much more talkative yesterday, right? When we did the test.
Even. Oh, yeah.
It's just he gets, I don't know what it is. That was Ross Broccoli. Longtime Majority Report. MR1 fans will remember him from giving the farm report. And I always like to check in what's going on in the heartland of this country. And I'll tell you, it sounds disturbing. It sounds pretty disturbing. And Ross is on the sane side of what goes on out there. Running for mayor. So if you're in the Lincoln, Nebraska, and Ross manages to register to vote and actually get his paperwork in, you got to vote for him.
I'm going to start his guerrilla Twitter account just to get him elected.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I think we should do that.
Yeah.
That is a good idea. We should probably start one for every guest who comes on who does not have a Twitter account.
Just have them follow the Majority Report.
I don't know if Ross will go into a full-on Marin thing, but maybe we'll get that next time. We'll see if we can get Marin to go into a full-on Ross thing. We're going to have Marin for the post-show on Tuesday because we're going to have William Grider for the first part of the show. And we'll have Marin in the post-show interview, and that will probably be the last day that non-members will be able to get the full 90 minutes. Neffer, not as much of a rogue geek as Kyle. We'll see what we can do. Gatteron, What is the link for the movable chicken coops? Can you find that? I think if you do broccoli chicken coop, you will find that video. And actually, I forgot to plug his blog. If you're in the Lincoln, Nebraska area, you can. He has a CSA where you can get vegetables. It would probably be the strangest CSA you've ever been involved in. His website is, I think it's Broccoli Pharmaceuticals. Pluger. The name Pat Paulson's coming to mind for some reason. So after this interview, will the new MR closing become broccoli? See peaches? Do people know the story of peaches? Maybe we'll save that for another day. We used to say peaches. Yeah, that interview didn't go over so great, but it was okay. Who are we talking to again? I feel like I'm listening to What the Fuck. I came in the middle, sorry. Well, DeFreedocrat, that was Ross Broccoli. Ask Ross what he thinks of Jersey Shore. Also, have him tell a Marin story. Swartz and his Sandler's bitch. Gorilla, donate your account for Ross Broccoli. Guy from Silent Hill. Name drop Fridays. Did you see the New Yorker piece on Paul Haggis? Oh, I remember how Janine brought in those you know, that whole thing. Janine got invited down to this, like, 9/11 respiratory therapy place. And I think it was only afterwards that she found out that it was run by the Scientologist. But, you know, there was a lot of real firemen there who claimed to be getting a lot of benefit from it. And she had him on one Friday night. It used to be, by the time the Majority Report ended, I wasn't doing Friday nights. Because Janine wanted to, you know, it was hard to do two people. And at that point, you know, we both wanted to have our own real estate. And Janine had these folks in on some Friday night. And it just so happened that a month later, I was switching or I was in town. And so I'd do the show. And then she wanted to have them on again. And I said, all right, that's fine. But I'm going to question them about this because I think it's, this is sort of sounds more like a religious ritual that they have. I think they give people niacin or whatever it was. And she said, that's, you know, that's fine. And I said, do you want me to? I'll call them. I'll tell them that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to question them. I don't want to sandbag them because they came on last time. And she said, fine, do that. And so I called them and I spoke to the guy and I said, look, I just want to give you the heads up. I'm going to be in studio, and I have some real legitimate questions about this whole practice. And I want to just put you on notice. I don't know that what you're doing is bad. I don't know that what you're doing is good, but I'm, you know, I have some questions about it. And the guy's like, that's fine. I appreciate the phone call. You know, we probably won't come on. I didn't want to be questioned about it. It's fine. And I was perfectly happy not to have that conversation. I mean, I just thought programmatically, we just had him on a month ago anyways. And so that's what happened. But then I think Janine and I, if I remember correctly, and then I was actually scheduled to leave early anyways. You know, I was going to leave, you know, just do like the first 2 hours. Because it was always a drag. I never got to go out that much on a Friday night. But I also felt like I can't, if I'm in town, I can't not do the show and all that. And I think Janine and I got into a fight. I think she was mad, felt that I may have been unfair with them, or I'm not sure. I can't remember the details, but we got into a fight about it. It was not pretty. But I think it was also frustration. She just was, you know, had enough of doing the show. It was too much. Janet. Just my opinion, Cairo time is pretty dull. Good luck. Dradmathes, hey, I hope your interview with Ross Broccoli goes well. Is that possible? Also wanted to express my annoyance about the comparisons between Egyptian revolt and 79 revolution. I don't think Iran's revolution should be framed in such a negative light. At least they gained national autonomy and could move forward on their own terms. Sure, Iran has huge problems presented by its all-too-powerful militias and paramilitary forces. But national autonomy is better than being controlled by a foreign country. At least they are trying to elect electoral democracy and have had some legitimate elections. This is way better than most Middle Eastern countries in terms of democracy, in fact. I guess my point is that Egypt is better trying to get freedom, national autonomy, at least nominally leaving behind autocracy, even if there is a risk they won't have the perfect society afterwards, as Iran did not. Well, I think people express that concern more from a stability of the Middle East and more from a perspective of security for Israel and American interests. I'm saying that without judgment. I'm just giving you an analysis of the comparison they make. If people actually took into consideration, national sovereignty and will of the people, then you'd have a different analysis. And then I think there's also an argument that Iran's society is somewhat repressive to them as well. I don't know enough about Iran to know to what extent it is. Their society is repressive across the board, and you know whether or not there's gains across the board. You know, I would imagine that in total, if you were to measure the positiveness of a revolution, I mean, just using Cuba as an example because I'm a little more familiar. And this is not to say that Castro's regime is not oppressive. And it's not to say that he's not a dictator. But it is also to say that they basically had a repressive dictatorship prior to that that was equally corrupt and functioned only for a very small slice of the Cuban people. And if you had those two realities moving through time, it is, I suspect that if you were to look at the average Cuban or the majority of Cubans, they are better off under Castro than they would have been under Batista. Was it Batista? No, it was... Oh, shit. My mind is fried. It's casual Friday, folks. But I don't know that for sure. But that's just speculation on my part.
It's Batista.
In terms of whether or not they'd be better. I mean, who knows? Batista would probably be dead, but who knows? Maybe it would be his son, Jim Batista, would be taking over. And, you know, it sold every piece of Cuba to... I don't know if it would have been the American Crime Syndicate or some other American. But yes, Egypt is better off trying to get freedom. I agree.
Just saw something. They've frozen his assets, the Swiss government. Mubarak's.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Interesting. I imagine they may have used that time from the speech yesterday to get some shit out. I mean... The guy is reputed to have $70 billion. It's unlikely that he does. He probably has $30 billion. Who knows? And who knows how much of it is in Switzerland? I got to imagine this guy's got money all over the place. The question is, you know, where does he go? I mean... I wonder if he got, you know, who he made a deal with and where, you know, the thing is, like, he can't go to another Arab country, I would imagine, for the most part, because that's going to anger the populations of those countries, I would assume.
I could see him in the Emirates.
Maybe in the Emirates.
I thought I heard something about Canada.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Like, there was talks or something. Maybe that was the Tunisian president. I can't remember.
Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills. That would be good. He could do some walk-ons for CSI or something.
That would be awesome. Super Funk, how is the Egyptian army going to handle the situation in the upcoming weeks? Is there any precedent for this, and what does Supreme Council of the Army mean? Is that an Islamic body? No, I have a feeling that's like I don't know for a fact, actually, but I would imagine it's like Joint Chiefs of Staff.
What I think is interesting is any transitional situation that I can think of off the top of my head in the past 50 years or so has involved like UN observers to help the interim situation. That's not been talked about here, so I don't know how the military plays into this transition, other than that traditionally the people with the guns are the people who ensure peace during a transition, or not peace during a transition.
So there you have it. I mean, nobody knows. This literally happened an hour ago, so nobody really knows. One Undone Bird, thanks to the story in the beginnings of the Egyptian uprising. I watched Democracy Now! And hadn't even caught that story on there. You wanted me to remind you of Sarah's story on NPR. I want to hear Ross's story about Marin. Sarah's story on NPR. I think it was just like when Sarah first met Mila, she came with a princess costume that she sort of wrinkled up and put in a bag and came over and said, "Don't tell anybody, but I was a princess. I am a princess, and I have an old princess gown of mine that you can have." And Sarah gave it to Mila, and Mila loved it. And then, you know, like, we stayed at Sarah's house in California a year and a half ago when we went out there. I think she got back together with Kimmel just for a couple of weeks, just so that we could stay at her apartment. And Sarah's very good with, you know, very good with kids. She's, you know, she's funny. Kids like her. Then Mila kept asking me, "Sarah Silverman's your girlfriend." I'm like, "No, I don't have a girlfriend. I'm married to your mom." Sarah Silverman was my girlfriend a long time ago. But she kept bringing this up, like, "You kiss Sarah Silverman." And I'm like, "Mila, I don't kiss Sarah Silverman. I kiss your mom because I'm married to her. I'm married to your mom. I don't have a girlfriend. It's not appropriate to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend when you're married." And she kept bringing this up, and I couldn't figure out why. I was like, wow, Sarah really made a real impact. And then I realized, like, she had seen the cover of Pilot Season, the DVD, where I'm kissing Sarah on the cover. It's not, believe me, it's not a warm kiss. It is one where she has a look of sort of mild disgust on her face.
Disgust.
Thank you. It's Friday, folks. I'm nearing the end. But that was the story about Sarah. And apparently she told that story on NPR. And so we were at ballet class, and someone was like, "Do you know Sarah Silverman?" Yeah. "Oh, she was talking about you on NPR. I knew it was you." "Oh, how did you know?" "She said my friend Sam and her wife Nikki and Mila." I'm like, yeah, that's probably not a lot of those.
It's a good bit.
Naitu architecture.
Into architecture.
Right. I always forget what that is. I figured out Mubarak. He's the Egyptian Joe Lieberman. He just gave that speech to stick it to the protesters. That's great. Isn't hacking union computers illegal? Why isn't the DOJ investing in the Chamber of Commerce? I would imagine it's going to be very shortly.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's going to be very shortly. This shit is unbelievable. This story is unbelievable. Do you understand that you have the Chamber of Commerce out there trying to ratfuck and to corrupt our journalists and to break into computers? This is an unbelievable story. This story will either be completely ignored by the mainstream media. Hopefully Rachel will pick it up. But it's an amazing story. We're going to talk to Glenn Greenwald more about it on Monday. It's just astonishing. And you know, how many days has it been with these emails? Yep. Well, you know, somebody's going to be digging through all these emails. Yep. There's a lot of people right now going, "What the my God? What do we do? Do we hire those people? What did they do for us?" Jay Shivone. Movable chicken coop, I believe, is the same as chicken tractor.
The four quadrant guy is Mike Figgis, not Paul Haggis. Eh, what are you going to do? Sugar High, 777. What? Is Isla Fisher pilot plot and pilot season based on real events? No, the Isla Fisher part is not. No, that's complete. That's completely fictionalized. The only thing that was like real in pilot season was sort of Broccoli's story was sort of vague, very vaguely. The idea of him being hot and a agent going to Nebraska to sign him. And then everything else was more or less fictionalized. I'm really proud of that show. I like that. Uh-oh, Kevin's semicolon said, Broccoli started talking about the Fed and the stream cut out. Frisbane, inflation would be okay only if minimum wages are tied to inflation. Good point. Well, minimum wages right now are, I think, at an all-time low based on inflation or anything else real. Avant, Broccoli's campaign poster. Oh, great. Put that on the roundup. Avant says, Janine sucked me in on that day that you were not on. Then you debunked it. I remember that show. And during Broccoli, I just ran and locked all my doors. This wave of paranoia suddenly just came over me. Sammy Camera, you might want to try broccoli with cheese sauce. Anything. I'm happy now. Just got the MacBook Air. I like it. Wow. I'm jealous. You have a very precocious kid there. Sam, she will be trouble as a teen. I got news for you. She's already trouble. You are right about Obama and Clinton having daddy issues, too codependent. That was Juan Cole's comment. Yeah, my daughter is going to be impossible. I realized the key with something like this is that you're not really disciplining or doing anything for her age now. That's a wash. You just got to get over that. What it is trying to meld her mind in such a way that she'll listen to me in like 5 to 10 years. That's all I'm doing. It's like it's Manchurian. Like I'm trying to like slowly like, you know, so that if I say to her like, hey, good morning, Mila. The woods are very dark and deep. You have many miles to go before you sleep. And then she immediately does whatever I tell her.
How's that working?
Well, it worked in Telephone. Did you see that movie? No.
Nope.
Glad to hear you finally convinced Mara to come on the show. I take it as evidence that you're probably a good parent. Said, I'll come on Tuesday. You ass, I think was the actual way that he... Okay, Zach Punk, your fights with Janine were always very entertaining. I missed them. That was good radio. I agree. Yes, it was Batista. Shanksoft, getting the he's getting the emails into a searchable format. There's no way I was mentioned in it. No way. Social Security fight plays fight against Matt Miller, the BS type meme that thrives in this debate. The famous TPM fueled victory over Bush's privatization attempt did not push the truth about the $2.5 billion surplus forward, despite scaring Dems back into place. The Obama now is a more of a threat now to Social Security than Bush ever was. Yes, with false facts about the debate. So goes the new fight too. Use the TPM model of constituents getting their reps on record en masse. Do we somehow get the facts through to the Millers, Alters, O'Donnells, and God forbid the Obama administration? At the very least, yeah. Let's see more Cedar on TV along with Cenk. Take these guys on. They really have to enter the debate. I still am sending information to Alter on Social Security. We had that argument. Then we had a little email exchange. Very good-natured. He's a very nice guy. Very nice guy. Worried about how old I am. And I sent him, I keep sending him information about, you know, the prospects of Social Security. And, you know, I can't tell if he's annoyed now with me, you know, or he's actually, you know, sort of like it's affecting him in some way. But I got to believe that just the notion that like, ugh, do I really want to get, you know, this guy's so
so, you know, adamant, you know, whatever. I don't know. I think it's awful. All right. Got to run. Neffer going through the... Oh. The gang, Jane and the gang and Empty Wheel are going through the 44,000 email dump right now. Cool. Gatteron, what would Myla ask if you saw a photo of you kissing Marin? Ross Broccoli, movable chicken coop video. YouTube video titled Egg Mobile.
I've got it up on Facebook.
Oh, it's already on entry on Majority Report FM blog, says Pluger. All right, great. Sam, I have a clip of you and Janine cursing at each other on live mics during commercial break on MR1. Was that live or was it staged? I'll send it to you if I like. You like? Yes, yeah, send it to us. That was staged. That was fake. We did that on purpose. Because you know how you can tell? There's no swears. Thanks, Broccoli and Stephen Elliott this week. Totally satisfying. Glad you liked it, guys. We'll see you next week. We've got William Grider already booked. We've got Glenn Greenwald already booked. We got Mark Maron already booked. We'll probably have Marcy Wheeler talking about this this latest scandal. We'll have more. It just keeps getting better. Become a member. Become a member if you're still listening to this and you can afford to do it. My goodness. Are you serious? Are you serious? Have a great weekend, folks.
Where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the man's not gonna kick in. My power.